Welcome to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. We're here to bring the best of college recruiting. Every week, we'll bring new guests with knowledge, stories, and tools to take you a step closer on playing at the next level.
Next level.
Let's do this. This is the iSports Recruiting Podcast. And here's your host, Ronnie Romero.
Welcome to today's episode to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. And at the same time, if you think that we bring you valuable information for those student athletes and families, please leave us a review at any platform you use, iTunes, Spotify. It will take you 30 seconds. This will help tremendously. If you want to know more about college recruiting and golf recruiting, you better listen to this episode. In our conversation today, we are talking with men's golf head coach out of Florida Atlantic University, FAU, Coach Marco Leon, better known as Mark Leon. Coach Leon has an outstanding reputation and outstanding experience for more than a decade. He's been coaching at Penn State, University of Florida, and now the head coach at FAU. Coach Leo also spent more than 4 years as the Canadian Tour with two top 10 finish. Just an outstanding conversation. I'd like to take this moment to invite you to download the app, iSports Recruiting app, on Apple Store and Google Play. Only for $24.99 on a monthly basis, you will get the opportunity to build an online profile for a student athlete that will provide athlete's profile, search engine optimization, school's requirement, unlimited highlight videos, and most importantly, unlimited direct email to college coaches. And now let's get going with golf head coach Mark Leon.
I've never been to that tournament. I think my fourth year at Penn State, we played at Arizona State's event. And then when I played for Team Canada, we did a training camp down there. So those are my two experiences in Phoenix. Other than that, I love it. I just haven't spent a whole heck of a lot of time in there.
Man, I tell you, it is a great place for golf, without a question. Without a question.
Yeah.
And the waste management, the WP tournament is crazy. It's crazy.
I know.
More people keep coming every single year. You know, they keep breaking records of attendance. So it's insane. Yeah. You know, I've been there a few times and people just go there to drink and have fun. And I don't think they even pay attention to the golfers.
It's a huge deal. Actually, I lied. I've been to Phoenix one more time. So my last year at University of Florida, we played NCAAs at Greyhawk. So I did spend a week out there.
On Greyhawk.
It's changed a lot. Like there's a guy that we used to play on when I used to play on the Canadian Tour named Brock McKenzie. And he works over at Silverleaf, which is just this incredible course.
Incredible, yeah.
We got to play out there the day leading up.
They do it.
It's such a cool spot.
And Silverleaf, they do NCAA tournaments constantly. They're always doing stuff right there, you know. So I seen it actually a couple weeks ago. I went through it and I saw the NCAA tournament. So I don't know who was coming, to be honest with you, but I saw the NCAA logo right there, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how familiar you are with college golf, but I tell people that are trying to gain an understanding of it. It's kind of a little bit like basketball in the sense of the size of our NCAA championship. So, you know, most schools have a basketball program because they just do. I mean, not every school can support a football program, but most will have basketball. It's the same thing with golf.
Same thing with golf.
We're a small sport, small roster. So there's a lot of my familiarity is I've only worked at the Division I level, but there's a ton of Division I golf programs. And you know, roughly like 80 schools will make the NCAA championship, but then only about 30 are going to play at the finals, which is where Greyhawk is hosting. So,
gotcha.
You know, we basically go through the whole year. You make NCAAs based on your national ranking or winning your conference. And then you play in these regional tournaments, and they're like the most miserable tournament you play the whole year because it's just do or die. And
oh no,
you know, it's like 15 teams, the top five go through. So if you're kind of a, you know, an underdog school, it's the most exciting tournament of the year because you have a chance to take down the big dogs.
Take but the
if
big you're the dogs. Big dog, yeah.
You either like, you either blow it or you're through, you know, you're either like relieved or you're miserable. Oh, you're never happy. Yeah. You don't actually get to be happy until you get to Greyhawk at the end of the year. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
So the national is always here in Greyhawk. It's always there.
No, they've got a contract. So I think it's for like 3 years. It might have, like, COVID might have wrecked the first year of it, if I remember correctly. But basically what's happened is since the Golf Channel's taken over the NCAAs, they've entered this agreement. It's been really cool for our sport, you know, promoting the sport, but it's changed a lot. So, you know, you kind of like the Golf Channel piggybacks the women's and the men's. So it takes a club that is really forward thinking and basically willing to shut themselves down for two straight weeks to their membership or their guests or whatever to host an NCAA championship. It used to be that before we were on television or to the same extent, you know, you'd have the women at one place, the men at a separate place. We're, you know, so it's been, I don't remember the first place that we played at the same site. It might've been Blessing or no, it might've been Karsten Creek or the Blessings or something like that. And Greyhawk entered this agreement and La Costa, I think is a resort that's being, out in San Diego is being renovated. California. They're going to be the next one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the other thing is they like to show it on prime time. So they like to keep it out west.
On the west side, definitely.
To be honest, man, it would be really cool if for college golf in the future, if we could get something like Omaha. Like it'd be really cool if they hired some big architect, paid them a ton of money, and they built this course specifically to host the NCAA championship like Omaha does in baseball.
The World Series in baseball. It's always there. No matter what, it's always in Omaha. Gotcha. That should be a good idea.
That's my dream. Maybe I should quit coaching and see if they'll hire me to build a course. Yeah. Probably not. I wouldn't hire me.
Yeah, so. Well, go to the NCAA. We have an idea.
Yeah.
That's good. Hey, Mark, but you know, nice meeting you, my friend. I appreciate your time though. Actually, this, I've been doing this for, almost 2 years, you know, having the podcast have 57 episodes so far. You know, I keep getting information, download, which is good. You know, people is listening to this. More than nothing, you know, what I like to do is just to educate people about college recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, how the college recruiting go. And, you know, sometimes depending on the sports, every coach have different opinion. Every coach have different approaches, right? So, and I'm learning because, you know, I develop an app for student athletes. It's not a recruiting service. It's a recruiting app, which is pretty much the same deal. It's just that it's a lot cheaper. You know, it's way cheaper to use my application than a recruiting service, you know. And, you know, I've been helping athletes, international athletes. I've been helping national athletes to get into, you know, the universities. And, you know, it's a great deal for me because I get approached, especially, you know, at the international size, I always get approached, you know, the kids that don't know much and they know this. I speak Spanish. I'm from Venezuela, by the way.
Oh, you know, okay, cool.
Yeah, so I speak. So they approach me and they ask me questions. So I get people from Spain, from Ecuador, from Mexico, from Colombia. You name it. Yeah. You know. So it's kind of cool. You know, it's been a crazy ride, if you want to put it that way. You know, and I don't know if you know Tony Robbins a little bit. Yeah. About, you know, I went through his business mastering deal. And that's what, you know, people start saying, Ronnie, you should do a podcast, man. You should do a podcast. Like,
yeah,
where you bring, you know, coaches and get you. So I'm like, man, but what am I going to say? I don't know. You know, like I'm not a broadcaster, you know?
Yeah, no, it's great though. Like, to be honest, when you invited me on, I looked you up and I looked up the podcast and I listened to two episodes yesterday on my way to practice. So Coach Mac, our baseball coach, and they're probably the most successful program, you know, during his time here. They've been probably the best program at our school. So I listened to what he was talking about and I learned a lot. And then JT Higgins from USC. JT actually, I think one of my best friends, Andrew Parr, was one of JT's first recruits when he took over at Texas A&M. So JT's one of the best. Like, he's really smart. And, you know, I've been coaching now for 11 years. So I try to listen to people that are better than me learning everything I can from them. And your podcast is great, man. Like, if I was a kid, if I was 16 years old and I listened to those two podcasts, I would have learned a lot that I could use in the process. So you're doing a great job.
Amazing, man. Thank you. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. You're from Canada. You're from Canada. So let's do the introduction.
I am. So we have something in common. We're both not American, right? So yeah.
Yeah. So let's
we're trying to help people navigate this American system.
Beautiful. Yes. Yeah. That's the goal, you know, in order for us to be successful. That's the goal. You know, I play baseball. My brother played for the Angels. My cousin played for the Tigers. Oh. And I came here to do a tryout for the White Sox. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm ready. Not know any English. Yeah. I was, you know, 18 years old, skinny, probably like 145, 150, you know.
Yeah.
So they put me to leave, man, with six guys that are just miserable for me because they're, I mean, stinks and the food. It was... So by this second month, I'm like, I'm done, you know, I'm done. So if someone would tell me, you know, hey, you can play college, you know, go to do a tryout at any university. I could go to Florida because it's closer to Venezuela. I could go to here when I came here, you know, go to Scottsdale Community College or Mesa Community College or ASU, whatever university, right? I could play, you know, D1, no questions asked, you know, but I didn't know nothing about recruiting, nothing. Like, I know that you can come to the United States to study, but I thought it was only academic speaking. You know what I mean? Of course, you have to, we're going to go over, you know, you have to have both, right? But, you know, it's like, man, my brother and I always talk about it. It's like, because my brother was a natural athlete, shortstop, you know, like, I don't know if you know a little bit baseball, but Omar Vizquel, do you know Omar Vizquel?
Of course. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I grew up, I was a little kid in Toronto with the back-to-back World Series champions. So I actually played baseball as a kid and you know, baseball, the problem with baseball and golf and in Canada, it snows 6 months a year, right? Six months. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to pick one or the other. And I played baseball up until 12. And right around the time that I was a terrible hitter, but I was a really good pitcher actually. And around the time that I got asked to play travel ball, that was the year that I quit and started taking golf seriously. But yeah, like growing up as a little kid, they built the Sky Dome. My best friend took me to the Home Run Derby. I watched Cal Ripken win the Home Run Derby. And we won back-to-back World Series. You know, Joe Carter with the World Series walk-off. So, no, like growing up in Toronto in the early 90s, being a little kid in the early 90s, I mean, baseball was huge. The Blue Jays were huge, and they were up until that first strike. And then I think they lost a lot of – they're doing better now. Like, people are really back into the Jays again, but they lost a lot of fans because of that. But, yeah, I've always followed baseball.
Because of that. Yeah, no,
baseball – my son hates – well, he doesn't hate golf, but he's a baseball guy. My little guy, I got a seven-year-old. That's his thing, man. He's – and he loves the Blue Jays. So
I love it.
Who Omar Vizquel is,
I love it. You know, I got two boys. One is four, and another one is 12. And I want him to play baseball, but he loves soccer. You know, and he's doing tennis right now. So it's like tennis, baseball. And I'm like, okay, you know, let's see how it goes. You know, you never know, right?
You know what, though? It's good. Like, one of the similarities, it's so funny. So we're going to a tournament next week at Auburn, and my number two and my number three man are injured right now. And so it's a huge bummer. Just spending more time with athletic trainers and chiropractors and stuff than I want to at this part of the year. But one of the cool things about your kids doing that is, you know, baseball is notorious for being just a terrible sport these days, for too much volume, kids playing too much too soon. And, playing these other sports, it develops a greater base of athleticism, and also probably gives your kids just a break, you know, so that the worst thing that can happen is that, you know, you're 16, 17 years old and you've tried to throw in all these showcases and do things year round, and then you get hurt and that stinks.
And in
golf, we're like further behind baseball as far as managing workload. And that's something I've been trying to get through to my kids is like, guys, when you go out and you rip a driver and you swing at 120 miles an hour, like that's a stress. That is a stress on your body. Just like throwing, you know, bullpens is a stress. And I've asked our pitching coach last year about it. Like, do your guys, you just randomly like throw 70, 80, 100 balls that you don't know about? And they're like, hell no. But in golf, we've always had this sun up to sundown mentality. More is better. But as the sport is changing, the equipment's changing, you know, TrackMan, 3D, force plates, kids, and at the highest level, like they're starting to push the power aspect of the sport. Mm-hmm. You've got to monitor what you're doing there, or you can do too much.
You hit it right in the morning, because one of the things that I consider with my son, especially the 12, because he's bigger, he's doing, he's extremely athletic. You know, he loved parkour. He loved parkour, you know, jumping, So he loved soccer. He loved baseball. And now he's getting into tennis. So I'm like,
okay,
I took him out of soccer because of what you just mentioned right now. It's too much. You know, they think they're professional. You know, they practice, you know, 3-4 times a week. They have tournaments, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 2, 3, 4 games, you know, three games in one day. We ended up doing one time. I'm like, that's the main reason.
It's a lot.
By the time that they're in the senior year in high school, they quit. They can just be pretty burnt out. They're just burned out of not having fun and enjoying. And so I say to him, you know, let's take a little break. Let's take a little break, because this is too much. You know, we went to Vegas. We went to California. They wanted to go to Texas, here in Phoenix, tournament. I'm like, let's take a little break. You know, it's a little too much.
That was one of the beautiful things about growing up in Toronto was you kind of had if you didn't play hockey, if you're from Canada and you didn't play hockey, you're weird. Like, it's just what we all did. So like, you know, my whole family, like we spent every winter, all I remember about childhood was a rink, because there were four kids. I was probably the worst hockey player in my family. My brother Mike was an incredible hockey player, like AAA from Toronto, so super high level. Mm-hmm. But you know, you'd play hockey for 5-6 months, and then you hang up the skates and you play golf, or you play soccer, or you play baseball. So you would kind of have like that summer sport and a winter sport.
And they break.
Ever since moving down to Florida, I've been here for 5 years now. 4 years as the assistant at University of Florida, and then this is, I mean, a year and a half into FAU. Mm-hmm. But I've learned a lot watching these kids. Like, it is a very different childhood. Like, some of these kids, they get into, most of your golfers up north, like, you're not, there's a lot of PGA Tour players from up north. If you go through their hometowns and see where they grew up, the difference is typically it just takes them later to get there, because you have winter. So
you have winter. You know,
you know, that's kind of one of the issues. You tend to get better later. And in Florida, some of these kids, man, I mean, they get really, really freakish good at like 12, 13, 14. But they don't always learn to play other sports. So
Got it.
you do see kind of like you do see these incredibly gifted, amazing players. Like a lot of the best juniors are from states like Florida, California, Texas, Arizona, because they play year round and they acquire these skills at a more accelerated rate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you'll also like you see a lot of these kids from down here where it's like, oh man, that guy was so good at 15. And then, you know, he's a year into college and he's no good anymore. He's or there's just good. So many people have gone past him. So, yeah.
That's very interesting. I love it. I love the this is the main reason why I do this, you know, because I get the opportunity to learn from you guys as well. You know, every single time, you know, and one of the things that I see so many athletes where they're good athletes, man. Like legit. Yeah. And I give you an example of my niece. She was a phenomenal soccer player. By senior year, she was done. She's like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not playing soccer anymore. That's it. I'm done. My brother was heartbroken because he was thinking even to play professional. You know, she was that good, you know. And by the time, you know, it's I think we're taking it too serious too soon. That's my.
Oh, no, for sure. I love that. You were talking to JT about this yesterday, about like sports psychology and when to start kids in. And I see with my little guy, my favorite part since we moved down here to West Palm Beach to FAU is, you know, we it took a while to find a house, but we bought this house on a street. And my son's 7 and there's these other boys on the street that were 10 mm-hmm, and they just go outside and they play. Mm-hmm. So when we go and my son's, he's a pretty good little athlete for 7. So like when we go and we watch a baseball game, you know, they put him in, you know, at first base and shortstop and he can make the throw from third base. He's a good little athlete relative to his peers, but I don't push him to do anything. I don't teach him anything. I just go outside and play, you know, mess around with him and the other kids. And I see, you know, like even with baseball, he's kind of had no interest in baseball up until a week ago because his big thing is FAU basketball. And he's just been he's obsessed with FAU basketball. So he's like just shooting hoops outside with his buddies for 2-3 hours a night. But now it's baseball season, spring training starts.
He sees
the Blue Jays played the Yankees. And now he's into baseball again.
He's into baseball.
My thing is, I'm never going to push him to do anything. And my dad, you know, I was so lucky growing up. Like my dad never pushed me to do anything. It was always it's always got to come from inside. Like
correct.
And especially like that's the thing at the college level. One of the first things that I was thinking about this, you know, when I was coming on the podcast, but you know, one of the things that I'll do at a golf tournament, like one of my big red flags is I'll go out and I'll watch the driving range and I'll watch the putting green. And if I see a dad, it's usually a dad. I don't usually see the mom getting up in the kid's kitchen. But if I see a kid that looks miserable and a dad throwing him balls, telling him what to do, that's a red flag. You know, does this kid want to do this?
Gotcha.
Or is this like, does the kid want to do it or does dad want to do it? And, you know, it's not to say that I would say, oh, I'm not going to recruit this guy, but I'm going to dig into that. You know, does the dad, when the dad talks, is it, you know, yeah, Johnny played really well last week. Or does the dad say, you know, we played really well last week. Dad, you didn't hit the ball. Like, it's not we.
Exactly.
It's him. And it's got to be his deal. It's got to be her deal. Those are, you know, at the end of the day, and golf is like the loneliest sport there is. You're out there by yourself for 5 hours. And if you're playing bad, man, it sucks. Like there's no worse sport in the world.
And we went over with JT about that. You know, we went over on how, which I don't know if you recall that section, but I say,
I did.
I never thought about it. It's true. It's psychological is it can be, you know, hard for the athlete, you know,
because so golf, you're out there for 5 hours, right? Like a competitive round is going to take somewhere in the ballpark of 5 hours. Every shot you have about 40 seconds to, you know, a minute if you're slow, 40 seconds to a minute to hit each shot. And let's say that over the course of a round, you know, sometimes you have a little putt like that. That's just a tap, and you don't give that a lot of mental energy. But, you know, let's say the average guy's maybe or girl is hitting about 60 shots, full attention, fully in it, like engaged for that minute. So you're out there for 5 hours, but only an hour of that is actually you engaged in the shot. So how you manage the other 4 hours is critical. And I heard JT say that, like, you can't be in it for 5 hours. You'll melt down, like you'll just implode. So you see this if you watch tour guys on or girls on TV. Like Fred Couples was a guy who notoriously, like, him and his old caddy, Joe LaCava, they would just talk about sports. You know, you kind of have to...
You have to deviate a little bit of the stress.
You hit the shot. You have your little, you know, debrief there. Some guys get angry. Some guys just kind of let it go. But then as you walk down the fairway, like, that's really the greats of the game. It's mastering those 4 hours so that when you show up... The best example I've ever heard about it was... My old friend of mine, who's a sports psychologist on tour, and he helped me near the end of my career. But he just said, this is golf in a nutshell. You have kids, so you can appreciate this.
Definitely.
So let's say you come home, you're driving home, and you're stuck in bumper to bumper traffic. You've just had a terrible day at the office, and you know you're angry. Somebody cut you off coming into your neighborhood. You come in, you sit down, you're on tilt, and you hear a glass smash in the kitchen. Your first thought is like, God, like, what's going on? Like, and you're angry with your kids. But if you come home and you've had a relaxed drive home, you've had a great day, you sit down, the glass smashes in the kitchen, and you're like, are you okay? Hey, is everyone all right? And that's kind of how golf is. If you get yourself into this like angry state and you show up to hit the ball, you suck. You have no chance. Wow. You're going to be miserable. Beautiful. And these kids,
beautiful.
The brain doesn't develop until your mid-20s. So a lot of the time, what's so hard about our job as college golf coaches is you're dealing with these crazy people. Like, my old college coach at Penn State, Coach Nye, he used to call it the insanity hour. He actually refused to talk to the boys about their golf for the first hour after the golf ended. Because they were just like, golfers are crazy. They're too emotional.
Yeah.
And you're always like, man, I left this shot out there. Oh, I didn't make this putt. Like, I made a bad mistake on that hole. And you're just like a crazy person for an hour. So I've taken that from Coach Nye. I try to let the guys decompress. And then when the whole situation settled down, now let's break it apart. It's okay. You know, you really, I've got a message to tell them, but they've got to be ready to accept it and hear it. And right after the round of golf is usually not the time for them to be in that state.
That's not a good idea. As parent, I think sometimes it's tough, you know, when you come and, you know, and you see your kid, and I told you, because I put my position, actually, my wife always told me, you always talk about this, you need to apply it with your son as well, you know, because she always told me, you need to apply this to your son, because you're great, you know, when it comes to you, when you talk to somebody else that's not your kid, you need to apply it to your son as well, because I get excited. I get, you know, like, I don't know if it's the competitive section that we are all in, you know, as athlete or something that, you know, it brings the passion, right? As parent. And we need to, when it comes to the kids, we need to, that's one of the things when I talk in front of people, you know, and I say, you know what, let the kid play the game, you know, it's a game, you know, do not take it too serious, because sometimes, you know, we are putting ourselves, and you probably heard this many occasions, we putting ourselves into, you know, the kid's body, right? So we want to be like, you know, oh, it's going to be like this way, or it's going to be that way. And not, unfortunately, you know, we, as parents, sometimes we make mistakes. We make mistakes, one of the things that we need to concentrate is try to let them have fun. You know, that's, yes, that's my mentality. And I've tried to apply that with my kid lately. Not 3 years ago, to be honest with you, I was a different guy. Now, nowadays, it's like, okay, we need to let him have fun. You know, now that he's turning into tennis, well, okay, let's have fun about that. You know, let's see how it goes.
Yeah, you know? It's tough though, man, because people try to push you into, they try to push your kids into, well, this is what's required. Like, this is what's needed. Like, I'm even fascinated by it. My little guy is, he's 7 years old. They're playing two or three baseball games a week. Like, yeah, when I was growing up and I was 15, we played like one hockey game a week. And when my brother Mike was like the highest level of hockey, it's like, how do you have these 7 year olds playing as much baseball as my brother, who is like an elite hockey player at age 15 or 16? Like, that's crazy. And then and then there are some kids that then they play like this house league and a travel ball team. And it's just,
well, man, it becomes, you know, youth sports, you know, I always mention these youth sports become a huge business, you know, and that's what it's all about nowadays. It's about a business, you know, and actually we are trying to get into an academy. I'm building an academy for kids, and I want to change a little bit that mentality. You know, let's focus a little bit more into, you know, the implementing the game first of all in the kids,
yeah,
you know, getting to know, you know, the rules and hits and outs of the sport, and then practice, and then, you know, little by little implementing, you know, the games, maybe a tournament here and there, but not like constantly all the time, because that's how you get burned out, man. That's how I think, you know, we miss a lot of athletes because of that, you know, without a question.
For sure.
Without a question.
For sure. And I mean, and at the end of the day, like, I heard Coach Mack talk about this yesterday in the podcast, where he was just like, I've never asked a kid, you know, how many doubles they hit when they were 10 years old or something to that effect. And it's
without a question.
Yeah. Like, I don't care. Not only do I not care, and he doesn't care, like, nobody cares.
Nobody cares
if you're the U.S. kids golf world champion at age 10. Who cares?
Exactly.
Like, you're playing against, first off, you're playing against like 200 people, and we can see this in our rankings databases. Every year participation goes up.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're one of the top ranked seventh or eighth graders in the United States at golf, well, every year you're playing against more people. And it's funny, like, if you look at even guys on tour, just a few that, some, like Gary Woodland won the U.S. Open a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He played college basketball before he transferred and played college golf at Kansas. Like, the guy was on a basketball scholarship. Taylor Pendrith, who's one of the best players out of Canada, he had a very modest junior golf record because he was a baseball player, but he had like a 190 ball speed as a junior. So Kent State took him and worked with him. And now when you watch Pendrith play, like, he's a freak. But that's the thing, is like, good players will come out of the woodwork throughout the years. And the best kids that I recruited, in the 6 years that I coached at Penn State, that was the thing. It was very different than coaching at Florida. Like, at Florida, we were, you know, these kids from down here that played more younger and shoot these incredible scores when they're younger. Those were, you know, typically the best guys that ended up playing for us were these prodigious juniors that had always been good. At Penn State, it was different. Like, my best players at Penn State, one of them, he quit baseball in 10th grade or 11th grade. And we used to joke about it. He's like, I sucked at golf in 10th grade. Like, I was so bad as a sophomore. But he got so much better, so much faster. And we had another kid there named Cole Miller, who Cole was one of the best wrestlers in the state of Pennsylvania, which is a big deal. Like, he'd actually beaten guys. Yeah, he had beaten guys on our Penn State wrestling team, which are, they're by far the best team in the country. He'd beaten them in 9th and 10th grade, but he was a little guy. So he was Cole was about 5'6", 5'7". And so he wrestled in that, like, I don't know the weight categories, but it was like a 125-ish weight category. Mm-hmm. So he had this abusive high school coach that made him cut weight. And he just at a certain point, he was like, I'm done. I'm out. So he takes that athleticism, though, to golf. So like he could hit it 330 yards. He was 5 foot six. And I didn't find out until his recruiting visit. He was over at our senior's house at like a party or something. And then the next day we're there at the golf course in the morning. And they're like, Mark, you won't believe what that kid just did at our house last night. And I was like, what did he do? They're like, he just like in the middle of this party, he clears out the living room and does a standing backflip. So here's this kid who could do a standing backflip, who could deadlift 430 pounds at 5 foot six. And he could hit a ball 330, 340 and turned into one of the best players in the NCAA. But he had no like golf resume in ninth or 10th grade. So it was just like he took his raw athleticism and it allowed him to accelerate golf at a more rapid rate than some of his counterparts. So, you know, people talk about this, you know, with like Tiger or Dustin Johnson, oh, golf's becoming more athletic, where that kind of makes its way into the recruiting process is, you know, golf is still a skill sport. It's still about getting a small ball into a small hole. There's nothing that says you have to hit it, you know, insane distances or anything like that. Like you can still get it in a whole different ways, but there are a lot of, part of this coaching, part of the thing that makes it difficult is trying to figure out what you can teach and what you can't teach and what you value, you know, in looking for what you think makes a good player. Like, I think another thing that a lot of coaches talk about, they really value distance. But I think they kind of sometimes undervalue puberty. And it's like, if you look at this kid who's 16, and maybe he only hits the ball 270 yards. Well, how big is his mom and dad? You know, how much bigger and stronger is he going to get by the time he's 20? Strength conditioning program. Like they're kids, they're 16. They're not like a finished product. So yeah, it's great if you can find a 16-year-old that can hit it 320 yards. They're probably not going to get shorter, but sometimes that guy that, you know, the little undersized guy that has a nice golf swing and hits it 265. Mm-hmm. Well, what if he grows into his swing and he starts hitting at 300 yards? Then he might be a really good player too. So it's weird recruiting for golf. I've learned that everybody has kind of something different that they're looking for.
It's very interesting because it's way different than all the sports, right? It's way different than all the sports. And that's one of the things that I talk to. I probably have 5 or 6 episodes with golf coaches, and I have you coming in right now.
Yeah.
And I last week I record one as well. So it's been for Weber University, you know, the director and head coach for Weber University. So we, you know, it's fascinating. Yeah. You know, I'm getting really into it and I'm passionate. But I want you to tell me, coach, how did you start? Because you play, you know, like you play hockey, you play baseball, you play, you know, play a little bit of soccer. So how soon did you start and go take me over a little bit, take me over on how was the stress, you know, getting an athletic scholarship in the United States coming out of Canada?
Yeah, it was an interesting process. So for me, I think with anybody, you know, generally you're going to start local and you're going to branch out as you improve. I grew up at this, you know, this dumpy golf course. It was called Woodlands Golf Club. I actually worked there. So my parents were teachers. So we had this incredible teaching pro named Wally Adair. And he used to run these golf camps. And out of these golf camps, he kind of identified about 6 juniors that were, you know, we could tell were maybe a little better and a little more interested than the average kids. Okay. And he set up a program for us where he was going to teach us and we would wash golf balls. We would pick, you know, drive the cart and pick the driving range. And so in exchange for his instruction and for us having full run of the place, we worked. So from the time I was 12, my little brother Mike was 10. That's when we started the program. And we were just there every day of the summer. And then we would play You know, my dad just kind of found the best events that he could put us into. So we played these local events. We played, you know, we don't have states. We have provinces in Canada. So we played like Ontario golf events and just the best things that we could get into locally and regionally.
Locally, definitely.
And then once I was a teenager, he started playing kind of the more national stuff. So qualifying for the Canadian Junior, playing the American Junior Golf Association. And one of the differences between, I would assume, I've never been to Venezuela, but we share a land border with the United States. Yeah, like Toronto, yeah. We're only an hour and a half away.
Definitely.
So everybody, our countries aren't that different. So there's kind of an interconnectedness between Canada and the United States. And there's kind of an awareness growing up, like, we didn't know anything about the American system, but everybody knew, like, well, if you're good, this is where you want to go and you'd want to go play on a scholarship here. So
definitely,
like when I was a kid, you had the guys, you know, everybody, you have those guys 4 or 5 years older than you that you look up to and you see where they're going to school. Mm-hmm. And then as you kind of go through the system, you know, you kind of ask them what to do. And you just follow the pathway that they set.
The pathway,
so
definitely,
for us, that was like, there were a few coaches in those days. Herb Page at Kent State is the most legendary one because he was Canadian. He'd come up and recruit in Canada. But for the most part, we knew that we had to come south and try to play the events and show that we could compete with the American kids.
Gotcha.
That's, and it's so funny. Like, this is the best story about my recruitment was as I got older, I was pretty good my last 2 years of high school.
Okay.
But I had my high school prom and all of my friends were going to this resort after prom.
Okay.
And I was scheduled to play this golf tournament in Detroit. I didn't want to go. I just wanted to go hang out with my friends,
definitely,
party and the whole thing. And my dad told me, he goes, look, you've signed up for this. You've made a commitment. You're going. So we go down to Detroit and I play terrible in the practice round because I haven't touched a club in a week, you know, leading up to prom, just being an idiot, you know, 18 years old. And I play kind of lousy in the first round. And then I kind of figure something out on the back nine of the first round, start playing a bit better. And I play really good the last 2 days. And I finish fourth in this AJGA tournament.
Okay.
What I didn't realize is the first round for the first hole is an easy par five. I double bogeyed it. And then I went double bogey, bogey, bogey. And the Penn State assistant coach was watching. He watched me play the first four holes. So he just saw me play awful, terrible, terrible golf. And then he looks at the results at the end and he was like, that's unbelievable.
That kid came back and did.
So he went and told the head coach. The head coach, Coach Nye, never saw me play as a junior. But the assistant coach, Coach Disselrath, told him, if this guy could start like that and come back and finish that good in this tournament, he's a bulldog. You want him on the team. So I tell people, like, you never know when your opportunity is going to come. You never know who's watching. And literally, like, I went to Penn State. It was the perfect school for me in so many ways. I had a really good career there. I was an All-American my third year at Penn State.
You went All-American,
Team Canada. I met my wife. I got my first coaching job at Penn State. So it's like, literally, I can draw a straight line between this stupid kid that didn't want to play this golf tournament and some guy watching me for four holes of golf. And literally, like, the last 20 years of my life have been defined by going to Penn State University and playing college golf. I would have never been on Team Canada. I would have never played on the PGA Tour Canada. Like, all of those things happened just because of that one little golf tournament that I didn't even want to go to.
You never know what could happen.
You never know.
You never know what could happen. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, in some of the episodes that I have that I've seen, you know, I talk to some coaches, they will say to me, I want to see a kid play badly on the game.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see how they doing, you know, their reaction when their things are not going, you know, their way. you know.
I love Coach Mack's story about offering the kid after four strikeouts. I was like, yeah.
You are the perfect sample right here. Look at that.
Yeah.
You started like that, and by the end, you ended up killing it. You know, you didn't win, but it's still, you know, you recruit, you know, real well. And look at that. Now you got the opportunity to go to – and Penn State, come on, man. Penn State is one of the greatest universities in the planet. You know, you went –
It was a lot of fun. No, it was great.
Yeah.
It was tough too, you know, but it was also like for me, for where I was at that point in my life, like it really was the right fit for me. Something that's super important with the college process is definitely people need to be honest with where they are. And they need to try to understand as best as possible, like, what is this place like that you're going to? And what's my life going to be like? And Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no. That's you know, that we always focus. You know, it's redundant every time that I talk to a coach, but I always keep saying that. And you probably heard it with Coach JT, and I say, you know, it's, you need to find the right school. You need to go over, you know, where you are as a student athlete. You need to understand that this, you know, some kids are not made for D1 schools. Some kids are made for D3, which I love D3 schools, by the way. You know, it's one of my favorites division, to be honest with you, because academically speaking, you know, if you take a look in the United States, the top 100 universities, 74 of them are Division III when it comes to academics, right? So I love that.
Yeah. You know, Coach Nye, he was the best player in D3. So that's another thing I was really sensitive to. You know, when we were at Penn State, and like sometimes you'd have these recruits and they would talk down about other schools. And it's just like, no, you don't understand how awesome an opportunity this is at every level.
The things
that make it special, like for me, it's funny. I talk to my teammates every day still.
Beautiful.
20 years later. They're my best friends later in the world. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And that's like when you're going through this process of you're going to move away from home. If you're you and me, you're moving to a different country. It's a lot to take in.
It's
to
a
have
lot,
other people that are they're going through that with you is special. And as a parent, like with my two kids, you know, my daughter hates sports. kind of my wife played for Penn State soccer team. So we had our daughter, we were like, oh, like, yeah, we're going to have a school athlete. And she just hates sports. So it is what it is. It's fine. You can't make them, you know, they like what they like, but our little guy, like I would love it if he, because he's shown that he's obsessed with sports. If he ever gets good enough at something and has the opportunity to play on a team in a college, what a blessing! Like it doesn't matter where you go. It's incredible.
It's something that I always call opportunity. It is a
huge
opportunities in the United States. You know, growing up, you know, in another country, you know, I practice once a week, man, once a week. You know, and I have one game a week. That's it. That was, you know, our training. Well, of course, you know, my brother and I, you know, train in the streets, you know, throwing the ball and things like that. And a field full of rocks, you know, where we don't have. I mean, it's amazing the opportunity, you know, that United States have for youth sports, you know, and playing at the collegiate level. It's like playing professional. Technically, you know, because you're staying in good hotels and you travel, you know, all over, you know, depending on the conference, right? But you travel and get to know more cities and we never had that in Venezuela. Never, you know.
And then when you leave, you don't have it. Like playing on PGA Tour Canada, So JC Deacon, who's the head coach at Florida, like we were roommates for 3 years on the PGA Tour Canada. We stayed in people's basements. We slept on air mattresses, on couches. You look for anything you can do to save money, you know, private housing. And some of those experiences were incredible. They were the best, but you know, you, like you said, it's not the same. Like, you're not taken care of. You're kind of fending for yourself and trying to scrap by.
Definitely.
These guys have no idea how good they have it, and they won't know until they get out on the other side. No. And
that's the beauty. That's the beauty of recruiting. That's the beauty of United States, which I highly appreciate. I'm extremely happy that I'm on this country. But how you ended up like going, you know, towards, you know, coaching. How come you decide to do that? Because not everybody can be named coach, man. And you went because I seen it. You know, I took my son away from three different teams because they just make the kids cry. I'm like, yeah. You're not a coach, right? So you really need to concentrate on. So tell me, take me over how you ended up in Penn State. You stayed there for 4 years, right? If I'm not mistaken. As coach, as assistant coach?
Yeah, I did four and a half. Well, I played there for 4.5, mm-hmm. and then I left and I played like national team and pro golf for about 5 years. Okay. And then I coached there for 6 years. So when I started coaching, it was at Penn State. Mm-hmm. What happened to me was when I left school, mm-hmm. And I was playing professionally, my parents are both teachers, so I actually got a job every winter in the off season. Some guys would come down and, you know, they would maybe caddy or do things like that in Florida or Arizona, or they'd have sponsors that would just pay for them to do whatever they wanted. I was fortunate that I had some people helping me out along the way, but I also needed to make some money. So I was a substitute teacher. So when Q school would finish and I never got through, I knew I had my Canadian tour card, so I knew what my schedule was going to be starting, let's say, the next April. Like, we'd start our tournaments back up in March or April, November, December, January, and then early February, 4 to 5 days a week. I was working as a substitute teacher. And then in my last 2 years teaching, I was what was called an educational resource worker. So I worked with special needs kids with Down syndrome, Beautiful. Autism. And that's how I made money. And then I came down and I would like kind of do a training camp for about a month. And then I would start up my Canadian tour season. So I had a young family. I had my daughter when I was 26. So into my first year of playing on the Canadian tour, and I had some injuries, and I probably in about my, I don't know, third or fourth year, you don't make any money on those kind of lower level tours. And I just I was going down to play Q school at Auburn, and my little brother played at Penn State after me. So I went and I had breakfast with my old coach, and I just told him, like, if I don't get through this time, I'm quitting, I'm done. I want to look for something else. And he was like, well, what do you think you're going to do? And I'm like, I'd love to do what you do. And he was like, well, you know, our assistant coach, his visa is not going to be retained. You should apply for the job. So I applied for the job, and it took a long time, you know, and it was also kind of weird because I kind of threw that idea out there. And then JC and him and I kind of went through everything at the same time together. And his old coach, Dwayne Knight, who, you know, JT talked about in the podcast, he's one of the most legendary college golf coaches in history. Mm-hmm. He called JC up and said, I really think you should do this. I want you to come be my assistant coach. I think you'd be awesome. Beautiful. So I wanted to do it. JC initially didn't want to do it. And then he went down. So he had his job for like 4 months before I interviewed. Mm-hmm. And he just fell in love with it. He was like, oh my God, I love this. This is amazing. And they did an amazing job with the UNLV program. And he got the Florida gig. So that was kind of how it started. I went back to Penn State. I to be honest, like, my whole reason for doing this is I had such a positive experience. I just want other kids to kind of have that experience. So it's different for me. Like, some people, the college golf coaching thing, it's like an extension of their own competitiveness, and I'm competitive, but it's never felt the same way as playing golf felt to me. There's like a detachment where I've really understood from the first time that I walked out onto the golf course with the team at Penn State, like, I'm not hitting the shots anymore. Mm-hmm. I can only do so much. I'm going to do everything to support them and help them and prepare them. But that's what I'm here for. It's about trying to have, you know, hopefully they get the same mm-hmm. positive experience out of this process that I did. And it's not all like, it doesn't mean that you show up every day and you're happy and you love it. Man, I mm-hmm. had days, I had semesters. I remember my second year at school. I hated it. I hated golf. Like, I don't know. There was just something off about me mm-hmm. that year. Mm-hmm. And I was mm-hmm. really, I had a good freshman year. So I got a little, my head, it swelled up, you know. It was like, I thought I was really good and I wasn't that good. And, gotcha. But for me, I knew that if I didn't have the scholarship, I'd have to go home. Like, I'd have to quit. And I mm-hmm. loved the school. I loved my friends. And I weathered that storm, and, you know, you work through the rough patches mm-hmm. and by the end of that year, you know, I was back to loving golf and understanding that, you know, I wasn't entitled to this experience. It was, mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. a privilege. But I think that's the thing, is you see sometimes people now are, I mean, there's a lot of changes to the system, you know, with transferring and the transfer portal and all of these things. And
yeah.
So sometimes it's supposed to suck. Like it does, you don't just show up, like you're going to have some rough patches that you Definitely. Have to work through. It's supposed to prepare you for life, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I don't know. For me, that's, I've always tried to approach it though. Like, my dad was a teacher, mm-hmm. And Sean Foley was my coach. So I had my college coach, and then Sean Foley was somebody, you know, who coached Tiger Woods. Justin yep. Rose and all these great people. Wow. Mm-hmm. I met Sean before he became a big deal on tour, and just the, how, like, things about that guy that people have no idea. I mean, he was a newlywed when he met me, and him and his wife, Kate, moved down to Orlando to start this junior academy before he made it big on tour. They let me live with them for like 3 months. Just some guy in 25. Yeah, like one of their students.
Yeah.
And Sean is just, so I always thought, like, if I ever get into this, that's the kind of coach I want to be. I want to be the way that Sean was to me. I hope that most of my guys would say, we like being around Mark every day. Mm. He's supportive. You know, I've always said golf is really hard and it's going to kick you in the face. You mm-hmm. don't need the coach kicking you in the face too when you're down.
Definitely.
I'm trying to help guys along and build them up. And, you know, sometimes I loved Coach Mack's analogy of being the bumpers, you know, making sure that guys are moving toward like the bowling alley. Cause that's my kids. I have to put the bumpers up when I take them to the bowling alley. And, I thought that was a really cool analogy, but yeah, that's, definitely.
And how everything went through, you know, getting into the Florida Atlantic University, like you know, AAC, even how that went through, huh. you know, like tell me the experience.
So, well, I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't work at Florida. That's for sure. So, I think. This school, one of the reasons I really wanted the job was when JC and I were kids and we were playing on the Canadian tour, we actually used to live on the FAU has multiple campuses. We have, they're called branch campuses.
Okay.
And one of them is in Jupiter. So I'm here in Boca right now, Boca Raton, 30 Boca minutes Raton. North of here. There's a campus in Jupiter. And we used to live above what's now a coffee shop on this third floor apartment. In right on the Jupiter campus. Mm-hmm. So when I came back down here to coach for the Gators after leaving Penn State, I came down to watch a junior golf tournament on that campus. And it was like, it had doubled in size. It was unbelievable. You could barely recognize how much it had grown. It's a very new school.
The change.
Yeah, mm-hmm. FAU is a very new university, relatively speaking. So I knew that the school was growing, and you know, with that growth comes, you know, some additional funding and stuff. And You know, you had some of these coaches like Coach Mack, who he's had this great program that he's built up over the years. But as they've, I think in the last, really like in the last 7 or 8 years, Lane Kiffin came here to coach football, and it really got the community seeing FAU in a different light. You know, he won the conference 2 out of 3 years, and then he left and took the job at Ole Miss. But they've built some new facilities. We're moving into a new conference. And with that, you know, I think they decided about 5 years ago, the athletic directors, we want to invest a little bit more into some of the other programs. So the coach before me, Ryan Jameson, this guy did an unbelievable job. He came in and he brought in a lot of great players, all internationally, really, is where he focused his recruiting. And they just went from outside the top 200 in the country all the way to like number 81. And then he left. And so he now caddies on tour for Justin Suh, who was the former number one player in the world. But Ryan's been awesome for me and kind of walking me through the process and helping me get acquainted. And just, I think when you're at the University of Florida in any sport, like even our basketball coach right now, we have one of the best basketball teams in the country. I think they have the most wins of any team in the country. He was an assistant. So my first year at Florida was his last year at Florida. He was an assistant coach there.
On the Gators.
So for me, being the assistant for the Gators for 4 years, I learned all about the state of Florida, the junior golfers in Florida, the you know, the FSGA and these different kind of systems. And also, I mean, to be completely honest, there's these, like every year, the Gators and the Seminoles, because University of Miami doesn't have a golf program for men. They have a women's program, but not a men's. So the Gators and the Seminoles are like the big dogs, right? And all of the best kids in Florida kind of, you know, that's like, they want to be a Gator or they want to be a Seminole.
Definitely.
But what I learned from watching these other great coaches around the state, Scott Schroeder, Bryce Waller, Steve Bradley, now Andrew Dana down at Florida Gulf Coast. Dana's a little newer like me, but these other schools in Florida, year in, year out, they just had great programs. And what they would do, you know, like they would, there's so many good players in this state. Like usually out of the top 100 kids in the country, there's anywhere from 10 to 20 of them are from Florida. And Floridians love hot weather. They're scared to go up north because they don't like the cold. So a lot of these kids, and that's when I listened to Coach Mack yesterday, that's what I said on my job interview here. Like, I want my program to look like Coach Mack's program. When you when you were saying, like, where do you get all your kids? And he's like, 75% of my roster's from Florida, that type from of Florida. Thing.
Yes.
It's, you know, that's – no, I will take great players wherever they come from. But I think that, you know, the reason why, you know, you'd have to ask my athletic director why he hired me. I mean, I don't know, but I think that what I've learned to do is I've learned to evaluate, this state in particular. And I think it in any program, you know, the best programs, typically they're good close by, or they have like a recruiting base where they get people from. Kent State, all of the best kids in Canada for 30 years have gone to Kent State. Herb Page, just so you just knew, if you're a Canadian, that's the spot. Like, I'm going to go to Kent State, and you feel comfortable there. And so for me to be at FAU, it's like this school's growing. I'd been an assistant for 10 years. I was ready to take the next step. Beautiful. I lived in this area. I loved this area. I have in-laws up the coast. I have friends locally. So I just thought this could be a place that I could, you know, to move my family and see us living. And, you know, our program is still very much at the start of where I think we can go to.
It's growing.
But
it's
growing.
It's evolving. Yeah, it's evolving. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And now when it comes to recruiting,
yeah,
I know you mentioned right now you're looking at the you know Florida guys, but I see that you have a lot of international kids in your roster as well.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah, yeah. You do have international kids. So take me over. What's the first thing now that you are the head coach, you went through, you know, assistant, what's the first thing you would say? I need to have these guys having this particular, you know, guidance or swing or knowledge. What's the first thing for you?
Well, the thing that I think the thing that differentiates this area is that and the old coach Ryan, he told me one of his recruiting pitches was, you know, if you go through the top 30 players in the world, like 15 of them live within 30 minutes of our campus. So, you know, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, all these, there's so many guys that live just north of here in West Palm Beach and Jupiter and Del Rey. So it's a great area to live. It's a great area to be. One of the things I think that's important as a coach is like yesterday, like Coach Mack talking about right field. He wants left-handed hitters because the wind blows. And we practice out the back of my office. We hit irons into that same wind. So I was kind of laughing when he said that. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a smart guy. So he's building the program based on something that already exists. For me, what exists down here is unbelievable weather and some of the best coaches, instructors, and trainers in the world of golf, because they all live close by servicing their players on tour. So what I'm trying to do is kind of over time, I want to tap into this kind of culture of golf that is really strong down here and is such a part of the fabric of kind of the West Palm Beach community. And I just want FAU to become synonymous with that. So that means that I don't care if the kid is from Switzerland or from Canada or from Australia or from Florida or New York. I don't care. But they better love golf. Like one of the reasons I went to Penn State and I said that it was a good fit for me is because I played hockey 5 months a year. There's a lot of Canadian kids that I, you know, or Northern kids, I'd say even, you know, kids from New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, I've encountered in the recruiting process. And they all say, well, I want to go south. I want to go south for school. It's like, do you? Like, you, that's cool that you do, but you don't know what that is because you've never done it before. You've now, if you've grown up in Florida, you know what that means, like during the off season. You know when to push, when to back off. But for me, the part of the fit was I felt like, I think I might need a little bit of a break. So I wanted to stay north. But for me, and I pulled the kids on the team, like, this would not have been a good fit for me at 19, FAU. Now, over time, I became a pro golfer and stuff, and it's your job, and you do get used to doing it all the time, every day. But that's the I have a kid on my team, a great example. He's from England. And, you know, he's from up like Manchester way. So further north, miserable weather. Yeah. It's cold. Yeah. You'd think, oh, this guy, you know, he's a tough guy, loves the weather. He hates the cold weather. Like, this dude is just, he's so angry when it gets cold. But that's what he loves it about here. He gets off the plane when he comes back. And it's just like, oh, it's beautiful. It's hot. I love it. He's the type of kid that you have to tell him. He's one of my injured kids right now. Mm-hmm. You have to tell him to stop. Like, dude, you know, you need to pump the brakes a little bit. So, correct. The type of kids that I want here at FAU are the type of kids that I need to stop them from playing so much golf. I need to tell them to take a break, take it easy. If you have, you know, if you have kids that are kind of halfway or three quarter way, this is, you know, it's a great place for anybody, but that's not really what I'm looking for. There's also a local professional tour. So like this guy, Eric Cole, who's a local guy, just finished second at the Honda Classic 2 days ago. And it's like this big story in the world of golf. Cause they call him a journeyman. He's a 34-year-old rookie. this mini tour that operates locally. So it's like a professional tour. My guys out of their dorm are allowed to play against these pros. They can go play in these golf tournaments against the pros. I try to build it into our schedule so they have that freedom. And I tell them, like, these guys that play this tour are legit. Eric, I think they said he won 56 tournaments on this minor league tour. So, wow. you ask a kid 3 years ago, well, who's Eric Cole? They wouldn't know. Well, everyone knows who Eric Cole is as of 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. So it's like, could you imagine if you're a pitcher and you're throwing bullpens to A-Rod or something? Like, it's, I don't know. Like, it's just, there's certain opportunities here. And the other thing that JT talked about, that it's another thing that you have to consider in golf. If you don't start, you're not there. Like, my wife was a backup goalkeeper in soccer. So she was at all the games, all the meetings. You get all of that experience. In golf, if you don't start, like, the coach goes on the road for 4 or 5 days with the starters. They're talking about strategy. They're talking about habits. Like, you have to be incredibly independent to be able to make sure that your game continues progressing with no help from your coaching staff. So that's another thing about this area here, is like, at most schools around the country, if you don't play, you're just at home practicing, figuring out how to get better. At my school, if you don't play, you can go play against pros for the days that we're gone. Like, there's literally, these tournaments are every week. So the type of people that work here are the guys that just, they want to be pro golfers. They want to, if I don't have people like that, I'm actually kind of doing a disservice to Florida Atlantic University and how the program should be run and what's possible. I think, Pat Goss, who's at Northwestern, is a guy that I've tried to pick his brain as much as possible. And I really look up to as a coach, being from the Big Ten myself. And I remember reading an article that he was quoted in, and he just said, we know what works at Northwestern, but if I went somewhere else, I would have to reevaluate everything that we do. And that's true with me. Like, at Penn State, what we did was so different than what we did at the University of Florida. And then now you come to FAU, and I've used a little bit of what I've learned at both places to try and build something that works here.
And now, I mean, you're, because I'm looking here, and your schedule, you're in the middle of the season. Well, not in the middle yet, but you kind of, like, in the beginning.
Kind of middle, right? In the middle.
So how are you feeling so far through the season? How things are looking?
This year has been really disappointing competitively. Seriously. So Ryan, the coach before me, did this incredible job. And basically, like I was saying before about the basketball analogy. So typically in golf, if you can get to a national rank of, usually it's the number moves based on who wins their conference, but it's usually somewhere in like the low 60s. You're going to qualify for the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
Last year, they call it the magic number moves every year. And I think the magic number last year was 70. So the team that was ranked 70 was the last team to get in. Mm-hmm. We ended the year ranked 72nd. So it was the best national rank in the history of the program. We won the stroke play at the Conference USA Championship. We lost at Charlotte, was the best team in our conference. Absolutely. They were amazing last year, but we beat them, and then they beat our brains in match play. So they won the conference title. So we didn't get the automatic bid, but coming into this year, the guys went home for summer. I had, at the top end of my lineup, I have some amazing players. Like, my one kid, he finished a semifinalist at the British Amateur. I had another kid that made the cut on in a European tour, or now it's called the DP World Tour event, coming back to school. Like, these are big achievements for amateur golfers. So I think what's really killed us, to be honest, is just the expectations that we've put on ourselves. I think that mentally, especially in the fall, the guys are playing really good golf at home. And then when we go on the road, they just kind of get hyper-focused. about, you know, where they are in the tournament or where we're ranked and stuff like that. And it just doesn't, you know, the best rounds of golf are like when you kind of black out and then you sign your card and you'll go, oh my God, I shot 63. Mm-hmm. And you ask people when they're in that mode and they're in the zone in golf, like a lot of the time, sometimes guys are, they know exactly where they are, but there's other times where people are like, yeah, I didn't really know, you know, I was just so focused on every shot that I didn't even realize, you know, that I was, you know, 8 under through 9 or whatever it is. So it's been, but I'm a pretty big believer that, you know, all you can do is continue to just put in the work and believe in your process.
Believe it.
And, and sometimes like that sports psychologist I told you about before, Paul Dooland, you know, he said, you can control the what, but you don't get to control the when. You know, you control what you do and how you work and the work that you put in, but and sometimes it pays off in a month, sometimes it pays off in 2 years. I mean, that's the tough part. So yeah, I mean from a results standpoint, I'm disappointed, but I also think that sometimes when you're disappointed, there's a lot that you can learn from it.
You can learn from it.
And listening to JT, like we had to compete when I was at Florida against his Texas A&M teams. And he was super smart. He knew exactly what they were, he knew exactly who he was recruiting. He had like a really defined kind of culture and like a toughness and a grittiness that were his Texas A&M teams.
Yeah.
And it was cool to kind of hear him. He was like really at ease, like, yeah, we're kind of rebuilding, but we're fine. You know, it'll be fine. So they're going through this process. And I think for me, last year was, it was great. And it was an exciting ride, and it was disappointing to get so close to your goals. But I had this happen at Penn State as well with a couple teams where, you know, the year that I thought that we were going to take the next step, we actually went the wrong way.
They went,
and then the following year, we went from like 150th to we were like 30th at the end of the fall. So we were doing the right things. It just didn't happen when we wanted it to happen. And it happened about a year after I maybe thought it would happen. So
definitely. And
that's
and
what I'm going to tell myself about this year. That's how
you know, that's okay, man, because I mean, you have a tough schedule, you know, you coming in, you know, you just coming with Auburn right now, then it's Simeone, then Stanford.
Yeah, I know.
So
I think that's part of what's held us back a little bit is I think the guys are like they can. I've tried so hard to explain to them that they're way closer to being where they want to be than they think. They're better than they understand. Mm-hmm. But when they see that schedule lined up, like, oh my God, Florida State, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Stanford, like, wow, this is awesome. And kids are so hyper aware of like their world ranking and this stuff now, that I don't know. That's the thing. They just see all of that stuff. And I think they just forget about the simplicity.
You know,
golf is like really hard and it's really simple. You can look amazing or you can look like trash, but if you go out and you shoot, I mean, you can just, it's not like pro baseball where somebody's got to take a chance on you. If you've got $5,000, you go play Q school, you shoot 68 every day, guess what? You've got a job. And that's the craziness of golf is like all these kids on my team, they can shoot 68, you know, they shoot, but to do it every day, well, that's something different. But if you do it every day in the fall for 2 months, guess what? You've got a job on the Corn Ferry Tour. And if you go out there and you average 69, guess what? You have a job on the PGA Tour. And guess what? If you shoot 69 on the PGA Tour all the time, guess what? You're a multi-millionaire. And everybody, like, I can't throw a ball 100 miles an hour. I can't throw a baseball 100 miles an hour. But all these dudes playing college, like, they can shoot 69. They can shoot 70. Definitely. So it's trying to build that up to where you're doing it more days than you're not,
you know, just told them, you know, I saw a video. Oh my God. What's the name of this guy? Basketball player, you know, he was talking to Kobe and Kobe, told him something very important, and because he was into a stress position, right? And Coleman told him, "Hey, you know what? Just play like a kid. You know, you don't forget that you still have a kid inside you. Just have fun, enjoy your time, right? A kid never stopped dreaming. You know, you always see a kid. What? You know, you can give 2 pence to a kid, and they will fly with imagination, right? On what to do and what not to do. Just tell them, like, hey, you know what? Just have fun, man. Just have." Enjoy your time that way, you know, you guys can kill it, you know, in the next games to come, you know. And but coach, you know, it's a pleasure talking to you, man. Hey, and I'm planning to go to Florida soon, so I hope I can meet you personally, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm literally right down the hall from Mac, so you can come visit us.
We'll tour you around Boca. Yes. Without a question.
And hey, everybody down here, I mean, Spanish is like the first language here. So, you know, you can take me out and you show me how to do it.
You need to throw me the facilities. I would love to, you know, and get the opportunity to, you know, do some swings, you know, I'm a baseball guy, so I don't know how good I will be, you know, playing golf.
We'll help you out. We'll figure it out.
Coach Mark, hey man, my pleasure. You know, thank you
so much for doing this.
This is beautiful. I love it. You know, I know that we have more to come. You know, I'm gonna keep you, you know, posted. And please do not forget, if you need anything, you know, just reach out. You know, reach out to me.
Same goes for you. And thanks for doing this for these families and for these kids. It's a really cool process, but it's daunting. And I think, you know, anything that you can do to just kind of put this information out there for them to hear it from coaches in all these different sports, it can be really helpful in going through the process. There's always something you can. That's what I learned from listening to the two podcasts yesterday. Like, I took different things from Mac and from JT that I thought were both like really cool and really helpful. And.